Okay. We have a lot of different batteries in the world and a lot of different needs for batteries and a lot of things that we can learn about them. So let me open it up first. Do we have any specific battery-related questions here that we might be able to answer? Okay. Well, then I will mention a few things and then kind of open it up for additional comments. All of us probably are aware that we have many different types of batteries, those that are not rechargeable or disposable, those that are rechargeable. So those are the biggest categories. There are certainly different grades of non-rechargeable batteries. Mercury, the standard, I can't remember the name, and the alkaline are three that come to my mind right offhand. I don't know if people are still using mercury batteries anymore. Then we have the little button batteries, which are, I believe, a lithium-type battery. Those are also not rechargeable. They are all different in their capacities of charge or amount of current that they can deliver. And then, and that means they're certainly all suited for different purposes. And then in our rechargeable types, we have many different types. The old nickel cadmium, there was an alkaline that was rechargeable as well. Again, I don't know how widely used they are. They're not perhaps as useful in as many situations as some of the others. The nickel metal hydride, the lithium polymer is another one that comes to my mind. Certainly the wet cell in the car or flooded lead acid battery, the gel cell, the AGM, absorbed glass mat. And Ken, I told you wrong on that a couple of weeks ago. Hopefully you've already discovered that. I gave you GSM, and that's totally wrong. AGM, which is absorbed glass mat batteries, which are sealed. The gel cell and the absorbed glass mat are sealed batteries. All right. That's a bunch to take in. I'm going to stop again for further comments or questions on just that much.
WIQ, you kept talking about the current capability, and it's really the power capability that they are using. And the power is the voltage times the current, so that's that.
Yep, that's true, and that's my oversight, yeah, a lot of different factors involved here. Anybody else at this point?
K0HIV, what's the best way to store lithium batteries, small lithium batteries? Should they be refrigerated?
K0OJ, nothing.
Okay, good evening, OJ. Thank you. Lithium, you're talking the little button batteries in this case, correct?
No, we're talking about, they're about the size of a D cell. A little bit smaller than a D cell, but they're not button batteries.
Okay, and are you talking rechargeable or one-time use?
These are one-time use.
Okay, I thought I'd better verify that since there now are some lithiums that are rechargeable of a different type. I don't have any information on that. Does anybody else have information specifically on the lithium batteries, non-rechargeable, that are better are storage conditions?
This is Ken, TBB. I have been told that lithium batteries do not like cold.
W2MIC, agreed. I think we're talking about the CR123A style batteries. and larger, the one-time use lithiums, and the one-time use lithiums are perfectly happy at room temp. They do not appreciate cold.
KE0HIB, thanks for the information. I just was wondering if they had any heat buildup, but I think you answered it for me.
Okay, thank you. Am I correct that probably most batteries are not well suited for colder temperature, especially storage?
Well, I know that if you are going to use alkaline batteries, they are good maybe, I don't remember now, below freezing a little ways. These blue bunny, whatever you want to call them, Energizer lithiums will go down to a lower operating temperature. They are, I believe, those are primary cells. And if I remember right, primaries are non-rechargeable. Secondaries are rechargeable. Am I correct?
Okay. Haven't noticed the terms primary and secondary. Anybody else comment on that? Okay, nothing heard there. But so far I haven't. Certainly there are operating temperatures on the various batteries. I don't think most of them, though, prefer storage at particular extremes of temperature that I've seen so far. So there you go. As far as rechargeables, there certainly are other things to keep track of, and this might be a good point to head back into rechargeables, because there's so much involved in maintaining them and charging them correctly. Do I have any comments or questions about that before we get somebody in here to really give us some specific details? N7GES for IDT.
N0WIQ.
Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, go back to the heat idea. If you discharge them too rapidly, they will get hot because you have a voltage and current situation that would be making power out, and they will get hot under those conditions. So you just want to be careful about the load you put on them so that they don't discharge too quickly. I'll put it that way.
Okay, very good. And that pretty much applies to any battery, I think, rechargeable or not. They'll heat up, and certainly some of them are much less disposed to high current draw than others, and some of them are more favorable for that, especially your starting batteries. But too much is too much in any case, so one has to always be aware of that. Okay, anybody want to tackle any other aspects of this before I try to plow on a little bit?
KF7COB.
Go ahead, Bob.
Well, I'm afraid it gets even a little bit more complicated for me, because I've got a little supply of what I used to call LiPo batteries, lithium, I'm guessing polymer, I don't remember for sure. But the good news is they pack a lot of power. The bad news is they can light up and make a big old fire, and that's a potential hazard I'd like to know more about. So I don't have any guidance, I just have a question about that.
KD0TBB, Ken, I must correct myself on what I said earlier about the lithium batteries. Looking on the internet here, lithium ion batteries for prolonged storage should be stored at minus 20 to 25 degrees centigrade. 15 degrees centigrade is ideal.
Okay, let me come back to that a minute, because that's kind of interesting, and I will need my centigrade to Fahrenheit converter converters out there to list that into normal, into terms that I'm at least familiar with, and probably most of us. But I do want to, so hold that thought, Ken, and if I don't come back to it, please do remind me. But first of all, Bob, I want to ask you about your batteries here. Now, what... obviously, you've had some explosions, and I'm certainly glad that you are safe, but do you have any idea what has happened, what was going on when that happened?
Well, thankfully, I have not had any explosions, but many warnings on the internet and ugly graphics about big old fires from these things. These batteries, they're great for, well, I used to use them for toy helicopters, but they're about the size, half the size of a pack of cigarettes, and they're about 11 volts, and I was always very careful with them recharging them. I don't really have anything more cogent than that. I just I figured, well, I got my notebook out, and I'll see if anybody has any thoughts on LiPos.
And zero WIQ.
Go ahead, Gary.
Well, I believe they have tracked most of those explosions back to the idea that they were improperly charging. And so, it's one of those things. In other words, you don't put something on that doesn't have the ability to shut off the charge current and or put on a light load so that they can just stay in the charger. But anyway, in the early days, people didn't realize that. They tried to use the same old chargers they were using on other stuff, and boom.
Yeah, Kerry, that certainly is true with a lot of our rechargeables, and more so with some than others. Mark, maybe I can ask you, I was under the impression the LiPo, the lithium polymer, were a newer type battery. Are you aware of that? I'm thinking, and I don't have my info right in front of me, but I was thinking they were the type of battery where every cell has to be monitored as the charging is occurring and stuff, more so than the other batteries. Am I thinking of the right one, or do you know by chance?
W2MIC, Mark. There are three primary lithium battery styles right now and about 25 others under development. The ones that Bob is talking about are the ultra-lightweight lithium polymers. As Kerry noted, the issue is overcharging, too high a current. Smart, good, every kind of battery we're going to talk about really needs its own specific charger. And for the touchier batteries, the ones with a fairly high internal resistance, you need to not only have a microcomputer monitoring the current versus voltage curve, but also measuring temperature. My really smart chargers for my nickel metal hydrides have five different temperature sensors touching the battery. In Bob's case, yes, absolutely. This is a problem, and as Kerry said, the people were blowing up those batteries and at various times have been blowing up lithium ion batteries. Sony had a really bad problem with that. And the answer is that you need a charger and a charging circuit that's highly intelligent, watches current, watches voltage, watches the change in voltage with current, and ideally has at least one temperature probe that attaches to the body of the battery.
W7LRY.
Yeah, go ahead, Larry.
Great. might have to see in the lithium group, the lithium ion phosphate, that's LIFEPO4, lithium iron phosphate, they do not, they are not subject to lithium fires. And it's a really, really good alternative because you have the same lightweight and everything without the danger. Like Mark said, like all the other batteries, it needs its own special charger. But and they are fairly expensive, but you can get, for example, a 20-amp-hour battery that's instant, for short periods, good for 30-amp discharge. And it's only weighs 7 pounds. So anyway, the lithium iron, that would be a good way to go.
W2MIC.
Go ahead, Mark.
The lithium iron phosphate technology has all sorts of advantages. Cost is not among them. I've been spending a few hours today pricing batteries on the internet. A wet lead acid deep cycle battery will run about 80, that's 80 to 85 cents per ampere hour. That's $0.8. The lithium iron phosphates I've been looking at in the 20 amp hour category run from $13.50 per ampere hour up to $15 per ampere hour. This versus $0.8 for classic wet flooded batteries. However, the lithium iron phosphate batteries will go for at least 2,000 charge cycles, discharge and recharge, and they are by far the lightest weight per ampere hour.
Okay, very interesting. And we've diverged a little from Bob's question, and that's okay. I think this is all very interesting stuff. Bob, did we kind of answer a little bit of what you're having to deal with over there? I would assume that I think your question was essentially proper care and feeding to avoid temper tantrums, so to speak. And it sounds like the big thing is very careful charging, and of course the other thing, of course, would be inspection to make sure that the battery looks okay and certainly isn't cosmetically starting to deteriorate, which could indicate some problems internally. Did we give you anything to work on there, Bob?
Yeah, thanks. And Annette, this is a good confirmation of, I really didn't want to handle these things too much without knowing what I was doing. They are good weight for power, and what I use is a dedicated charger specific to those batteries, and but I haven't used them in a while, and I thought, well, should I start using them toward radio applications or send them down to Best Buy or whatever? So, good. I'm glad they're okay for me. And I have been kind of careful because they do have some nasty pictures on the internet about little mini explosions in people's garages.
Yeah, well, and it's always interesting to me on YouTube that you'll see a lot of those kind of videos, and some of them certainly are done on purpose just to see how big a bang they can make. But you know, warnings certainly are there. Yeah, I would kind of think, and Mark or somebody could set me straight, one of the things you probably might do if you weren't certain about the battery or the charger, and Bob, I'm sort of assuming that you've gotten a collection of these that that have not been used for a while, or that you've bought used and you're not absolutely sure of the condition. Is that right, Bob?
Well, I've got a small collection of these that I've used not too often. This was, you know, for toy helicopters, you got weight and power, and those are critical. And I guess the least critical number is how many bucks they cost, because if you want to do that, you got to pay. Now I want to repurpose those and see if I can use them for some radio application. Otherwise, sir, I got no more interest in toy helicopters.
Okay, very good. So my question was going to be to the folks out there was, I guess one of the very basic things you could do is watch the battery as it's charging, especially if it's kind of an unknown, and watch for unusual heat or things like that to happen as it's charging. Would that be a reasonable suggestion to offer? Certainly, having the right charger and assuring that the charger's in good shape, but I would imagine at least, you know, doing what checking you can that way, just to make sure physically that stuff looks okay, is probably a fairly reasonable caution.
W2MIC.
Go ahead, Mark.
Mark. Generally speaking, yes. For all of the different flavors of batteries that you want a charger that is specifically knowledgeable about that particular kind of battery. Good chargers have some sort of temperature sensor that is within the circuitry of the charger and will limit the charging current or turn it off if the battery gets too warm. Another approach is to use a little inexpensive infrared monitor, looks like a gun, that has a little laser, and you point the laser at what you want to measure, like your fry pan or your stove or your turkey or whatever, and it will read the temperature out to you. If the battery starts getting warm, you should definitely turn the charger off. If I were Bob and I were charging these little batteries of his, I would charge them in open air and I would have a fan blowing on them.
TF7BOB.
Okay, go ahead, Bob.
Sorry about the slight delay, hamburger. The other rule of thumb we had was look at them from 20, 25 feet away, and if they start swelling, shut off line power for your charger.
Oh yeah, if a battery swells, any kind of battery, it's dead. It may still hold charge, but it is irreparably damaged.
N0WIQ.
Go ahead, Kerry.
Well, a rule of thumb might be to try to charge it with about 1/10 of its rated current, and charge it slow, charge it fully, what have you, and then be careful about the motor power.
Yeah, okay. And now in Bob's case, that would probably involve using a different charger. Perhaps his charger already does, you know, that, but then you'd start modifying chargers or modifying things, and you start suddenly taking over the smarts that are built into the charger. And I suppose that could be a good thing, but it also could be problematic if you weren't absolutely sure what you were doing. But I like the idea of the infrared sensor. I would imagine that could even catch things before swelling started happening, in some cases. So that's probably, you know, anytime you've got something unknown or something that's been around for a while, because they do have a limited shelf life. So, but anyway, Bob, sounds like you can give them a try and see what happens there. So just handle with care, as you already know.
Yes, exactly. I never have seen a battery of mine swell up because of the dedicated chargers. They're made for those batteries, but I'd like to see, take those things, charge them up on the other charger, and now use them for some kind of radio application. So thanks for the Net's attention on that, and I'll get back to listening to other people's circumstances.
Okay, very good. Good question. Thank you, Bob. Any other comments on this before we go on here?
A KD0TBB.
Go ahead, Ken.
While listening to the conversation going back and forth, I've been doing a little research on the internet, and there is an excellent website that will tell you more than you ever wanted to know. The website is Battery University, one word, batteryuniversity.com, and the first sentence that I am reading, the recommended storage temperature for most batteries is 15 degrees centigrade, and for us poor Americans, that works out to 59 degrees Fahrenheit.
Okay, well, that's very interesting, and maybe that's why so many places are saying, you know, not anything special temperature-wise, because refrigerators are certainly going to be, you know, much colder than 59, and so, you know, room temperature, maybe not home temperature, but room temperature is what, considered 70, or something of that nature. I'm kind of guessing at this anyway. Certainly that maybe is why the recommendations have been the way they are. Anyway, thank you, Ken. I appreciate that. And yeah, I appreciate you converting back for us, because I certainly cannot do that in my head easily. I learned it at one time, but it's been too long, and I've forgotten the formula. N7GES for identification. Do we have any other questions at this time?
N0WIQ again?
Go ahead, Kerry. Kerry.
Well, in my experience, over quite a variety of batteries, most of them like to be charged with a current source. And so they monitor the voltage, so when it reaches the appropriate level for the current source or for the charge cycle, they can shut off when the voltage reaches a certain point. But hey, that's just a comment I want to make, is I just really haven't met a battery that doesn't like being charged with a current source.
Well, when I first heard the term smart charger, I almost smiled, except that I guess I'm getting used to it now. Everything is smart, and maybe some things don't need to be smart, but it sounds like charging is one of those areas where it's very, very important, especially with some of our specialized batteries. Three-stage and sometimes four-stage charging seems to be fairly common with a lot of them, and some even much, much more specific. But apparently it's very important to keep the voltage and control the current at one point, and then adjust the keep the current and vary the voltage at some point with some of these. And so these chargers do have to be very smart to monitor all those things and then make those appropriate adjustments. So I guess, you know, charging is not a trivial thing anymore, and thinking back, I'm amazed that my little old gel cell I had years ago, which I'm trying to remember, I was thinking it was maybe a 20 amp, not 20 amp, but 20 ampere hour, maybe. I can't remember, it was too long ago, lasted as long as it did, because I was using a car charger on it. I did notice that the car charger did not cut back or did not shut off, so I was always very careful to at least shut the thing off when it got up to a certain voltage, but that probably was still not good on that battery, and it still lasted me for a way longer than I should have expected, now that knowing what I know now. So anyway, we live and learn, and fortunately I caused no fires or explosions, so that's the way it is. Other comments, there are a lot of other things that probably could be asked. One of the big topics last week was figuring out the size or capacity of batteries that we might want for a particular usage. Did we pretty well cover all of that last week for everybody?
WQMIC, I have some comments to add to James's discussion from last week if there aren't any other questions.
Well, I hear nothing at this point, so go ahead, Mark.
Well, last week, James, KI0KN, went over the fundamental algorithm for figuring out how big a battery you need. And I'll give both the engineering perspective and the, yeah, but could I have that in plain English, please, perspective. Generally speaking, batteries, you get a battery, and the battery is rated at some number of amp hours. And you have to realize that you don't get out all of what you put in. So you're going to pay about a 25 to 50% overage as you're charging the battery. To get 125 amp hours into the battery, you're going to have to spend 150, 180, which is okay if you're charging off the wall. But if we use my little or my big 125 amp hour battery as an example, I don't get 125 amp hours out. That's the total capacity of the battery. And in my case, I have a deep cycle marine battery. But if I were to discharge it down to zero, I would kill the battery dead and it would never take a charge again. The general rule of thumb is that you can discharge a battery to 50%, half of its rated amp hour number. And immediately you get into all kinds of trouble trying to figure out, well, how much current do I need and how long is all that going to last? I'm going to drop and come back up here. And James briefly mentioned what I think is the best method out there, and that is to get an amp hour meter, not just a voltmeter that measures volts and amps, but a meter that actually tells you how many amp hours have flowed through the meter. And the general algorithm is you say, well, the manual says if I've got a 50 watt radio here, that's going to pull 13 amps. And so 13 amps, and we'll assume that I talk for 25% of an hour, so 13 amps for 25% of an hour plus, 2 amps to listen for the other 75% of the hour. And you run some numbers, and you say, okay, I need this many amp hours to run for a week when the power's out. And then, okay, I have to derate my battery by a factor of 2. So if I'm going to have a 125 amp hour battery, I'm going to get 60 something amps out of it, 60. And that's an awful hard calculation. And I did all those numbers. And then I clamped a little turnage meter on. I think I spent 23 or 24 bucks for it at King Radio. And the NCARC website resources page has a pointer to that meter. And so I put a meter in between my battery and my radio, and I ran for a week. And I discovered that my calculations were way, way off, that I didn't use anywhere near as much energy from the battery as I thought I would, because I actually measured how many amp hours I used. That was really useful in two ways. First of all, I have a 125 amp hour battery, and so when I'd used 60 amp hours, I said, well, it's time to recharge. That's a little conservative for a deep cycle marine battery, but it's a good guideline. And I was able to come up with some pretty good numbers for how much draw do I actually put on the battery. So my simple version is get a $25 meter and measure.
Yeah, and I know tonight, this afternoon, I was reading about another factor which I had never heard of before, and that's the difference. It was a German engineer that had discovered the difference in capacity varies with the amperage that you use. Somebody's going to have to give me the technical on this, because I read it a couple of times this afternoon and was brand new, and it was part of the exploding brain syndrome here.
I think you're speaking of the 1897, that was 1897, not 1997, discovery that what the amp hour rating of a battery is depends on how fast you're drawing current. I think the pronunciation is Poiket. And the general idea is if you are drawing a very low amperage, you have to derate the battery by about 10%. But if you are, in terms of amp hours, but if you are drawing at high current, you have to derate the battery by 60%, 60. So most manufacturers will provide you with this information. It's very well known. It's very well measured. But the more current you're pulling out of a battery, the more amps you're pulling at one time, the less the total number of amp hours you get out, because as the battery releases energy, it is both releasing electricity and heat. And as the battery heats up, the internal resistance goes up, and you are heating the battery and decreasing the battery's lifespan and decreasing the amount of charge you can get out of the battery.
Yep, there you go. Thank you. I was hoping you'd be able to catch on to that and shed some more light on that. It made sense to me at the time, but it was several hours ago. So, thank you. So there's a lot of variables involved in this. And, yeah, the idea of a meter to measure the ampere hours is probably a good one. The other thing that I don't think I quite realized is... well, until recently, was the fact that, you know, when they say run a battery full cycle, definitely does not mean completely dead, because apparently in most cases that can be very harmful to the cells. And I was surprised with a 12-volt battery to see the low range is not too terribly low. It's like 11.8 volts in a lot of cases.
KD0TBB.
Go ahead, Ken.
If I may just back up one moment. Earlier, an amp hour meter was mentioned, and I'm looking on Amazon right now for one. What kind of meter should we be looking for in that? I mean, there's just many choices here.
Well, the
common watt hour and amp hour meters, one of them is the watts up. That's not what, W-H-A-T, but watt, like the name and the power number, W-A-T-T. That is a meter that will run about $75. The second one is a Turnigy, T-U-R-N-I-G-Y, Tango Uniform Romeo, T-U-R, November India Gulf Yankee. And that should run about $23, $25. It does all the same things that the three times as expensive watts up meter does. I highly recommend the Turnigy. I have one. I know that KI0KN uses several. They work very well. I've seen the careful analytics on how accurate are they, and they're off a little bit, 5% plus or minus here and there. But for amateur use, they're plenty good. For an engineering bench, nope, not good enough.
Okay, Ken, any further question or comment on that?
No, appreciate the information. I'm just going to have to keep searching.
Yeah, I'm running searches on Amazon, and Amazon does not carry the Trinergy meter. I encourage you to go to the Northern Colorado Amateur Radio Club website, go to the resources page, and search for Trinergy, and there is a pointer to the importer in California, and they typically get things to you within 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, and that is a good recommendation, and I know that there are places to buy them where they're a lot more expensive with a different brand name or something of that nature there. So, yeah, definitely go to ncarc.net. I am right on that, ncarc.net.
Yes, .net.
Here I am on the board and can't remember, but hey, you know, I have a lot of other things to remember. And ncarc.net and the resources page, as Mark said, and it'll be right there. So that's a great resource for a lot of things, and we keep trying to add other things to it as we get them as well. So do give that a try, Ken, and hopefully you'll find it. And what we have done, I don't know if you use Anderson power poles for connectors. I don't remember if I showed you that over here when you were here. But I know that Mark and several other people have just reconnected their, or refitted the cables on the Trinergy with Anderson power poles, and then if you, that is, if you're using Anderson's for all of your other gear, you just simply put it in line with the other gear that you're running, and there you go, and it's all set. Now, I have a question about that, Mark. In order to measure total amp hours, the thing must be able to count from the time you connect it to the next recharge time continuously, whether current's flowing or not, then I take it.
I think I understand your question. The meter is cumulative, and so you turn your power supply on and you leave your power supply on. You run your radio, you can turn your radio on or off as you wish, but you, in order to keep the memory in the meter on, you need to keep power to the meter. The really nice part about the meter is that you can either measure the energy going into the radio. In other words, you can connect the meter between the battery and the radio and measure how many amp hours the radio has pulled cumulatively. Or you can put the meter between the charger and the battery, and you can see how many amp hours have gone into the battery from the charger. So you can use the meter either as you are discharging the battery by running the radio, or as you are charging the radio by running a charger.
Okay, and yes, you reminded me of that function, which I'd forgotten about. That really does make that meter more interesting. Now, in order to do that, then, do you have to detach power from, do you have to detach it from the battery before you begin that charge cycle in order for the meter to reset?
Yes. And you have to physically turn the meter around, which is why Anderson power poles are nice, because the meter only accepts current going in one direction, from the source to the load. So when you're running the battery to power the radio, you have the meter running in with the battery as the, on the source side and the radio on the load side. But when you are charging the battery, you have the charger on the source side and the battery itself on the load side.
Okay, that's right. I know you've told me all of this before, but it's probably good for other people to hear as well. Anyway, an excellent way to go. I can't wait to get one that either talks or that is easy to read out, because that would be fun. But that'll be a while coming, I think, unless we can come up with something for a PIC processor or the Arduino or something of that nature, maybe, at some point. Anyway, for those of you who are with no problem with vision, your solution is extremely simple, and those are nice little tiny meters. And especially, if, and like you said, if we hook it up with power, with Anderson power poles, it's so easy to put into the circuit any way you want, any time you want. So there you go. Okay, any other power or battery-related questions? We've been going on here for quite a while, and I hope we've been answering everything. But any questions in that area at all, please come now.
If no one else, I'll ask the question everyone asks me, which is, I'm a new ham, I want a backup battery, what kind do I want?
Okay, do you want to answer that, or do you want me to ask you some questions about what you want it for?
Nope, I'll go ahead and answer. Generally speaking, the best bang for the buck is a deep cycle wet lead acid battery. Car starter batteries, like you would have under the hood of your car, you do not want, because they are designed to put out lots of cold cranking amps to turn your starter. They are not designed to be drawn down deeply. If you run a ham radio off them and draw them down, they will die. A deep cycle a deep cycle battery is designed for use with an electric trolling motor, and a deep cycle battery can be regularly drawn down to 50% and safely drawn all the way down to 20% capacity. In other words, you can get 80% of the total number of amp hours in the battery out again. The bad news is, of course, they're heavy, because a deep cycle battery gets its capabilities by having very thick lead plates in the lead acid bath, and you dare not tip them over because they will spill sulfuric acid, which is very, very bad stuff. Generally speaking, the spec is that you can tip a lead acid battery as much as 21 degrees off a vertical. That means you really don't want to tip them over. The best bang for the buck battery, if you are going to be moving it around, is a AGM, absorbed glass mat battery. They cost between 1.5 times and 2 times as much as a deep cycle lead acid battery per ampere hour. The good news is you can tip them over, tip them upside down, stand them vertically, they don't care. You do absolutely need a AGM-specific charger to go with that. You cannot use a standard charger for your wet lead-acid car starter battery. That will destroy an AGM. You do not want a gel cell. Kevin was talking about some time back having a gel cell. Basically, the AGMs cost the same as a gel cell and do everything better. They are more resistant. You can draw them down too far and restore some or most of their capability, whereas if you draw a gel cell down too far, it's dead. So if you have to move the battery around, you're going to tip it over, you're going to stick it someplace, you're going to have it be upside down, or in particular, if you're going to have it indoors as your station backup, when you charge an AGM battery, it does not leak sulfuric acid into the air. When you charge a wet lead acid battery, it does. And so you want to keep your wet lead acid battery out in the garage when you're charging it. If you want to have a battery that lives indoors...
Ooh, speaking of batteries, I wonder if you lost yours, Mark. I thought maybe you just timed out your transceiver there, N7GES. You still with us?
Yep, I think my radio was chirping at me saying you talked too long, dummy. Sorry about that.
Okay, you want to continue, or were you done?
Nope, the conclusion is if you can keep your battery out in the garage, the best bang for the buck is a deep cycle wet lead acid battery, a flooded battery, you'll hear the term. Numbers, I get mine at Walmart, 125 amp hours, $100. Great deal. If you need to move that battery around, or if you want to keep it indoors under your station, maybe with some kind of a charger, then you want an AGM battery, and that's going to cost you 1.5 to 2 times as much per ampere hour as a wet lead acid. And back to net.
Okay. And, of course, we're talking major station backup here, or at least HF station backup. Certainly those sizes are going to be different if you want something to take out in the field for ARES-type work and get a mobile radio 50-watt VHF, UHF running for a short amount of time. So there's a lot of variety involved there, but, you know, bang for the buck, that's a good point and well advertised, or well spoken there, so very good. All right, one more time here. Any other questions?
KE0HIM with a comment.
Oh, good. Go ahead.
I've been thinking about getting some golf cart or forklift batteries for my camp trailer. I hear those are really a true deep cycle. You can take those down to almost nothing, and it takes a long time to do it. Only drawback is it requires two because they're 6 volts, and they cost twice as much as a regular marine deep cycle battery. And you'd have to run them in series to get 12 volts. But I've just been thinking about this deep cycle thing, and those seem to me like the way to go.
Yep, those are called traction batteries, because they are used to drive things that have to get traction, like forklifts and golf carts, etc., and they are excellent solutions. The cost is double, but the lifetime is more than double.
Okay, Rick, anything further on that?
Not really. I just wanted to bring it up. You know, they're like over $200 a piece, so... You know, you really have to save for a while to get them, I guess, unless you're already rich.
Yeah, and the other issue is that if you have the battery charged up and don't use it, the battery deteriorates anyway. So the lifetime of a regular deep cycle battery is about 3 years. The lifetime of a golf cart battery, if you're not using it, is about 4. In my math, and I've done these numbers very carefully, the Walmart 12-volt deep cycle marine battery is a better deal.
I was away for a while, but another interesting point, too. Any of those batteries, do not set them directly on the cement. You'll kill them.
No, you won't. That idea dates back 100 years to when batteries were made of wood and asphalt. And these days, you look carefully at what all the battery manufacturers say, and they say with the current technology and the plastics and polymers, there is no problem setting a battery on concrete.
Well, go ahead and do it, and when it dies, you can tell me about it.
RTFM, Cooge.
Thanks for the caution, but yeah, I read that a couple of different places today. Mark, can you explain why that was a problem? It mostly had to do with leaking fluids that then caused conductivity with the concrete. Was that not true?
Yep. Oh, it absolutely was a problem. Past tense. In the old days, early on in the history of batteries, we literally made battery cases out of wood, you know, like trees. And to insulate the wood from the acid, the inside of the battery case, the wooden battery case, was coated with asphalt, the stuff you find on roads, you know, like. And the problem, of course, was that wood is not dimensionally stable with humidity changes, and so the wood would expand and shrink, and the asphalt would crack very slightly. And you would get a leak coming out of the battery. Not much, just kind of dripping. But the leak of the sulfuric acid would get down and interact with the concrete, and you would get a circuit. going from the battery through the leaking case, through the fluid, down into the concrete, and it would drain the battery, literally. So absolutely, this was a problem, yes.
Okay, yeah, very good. Yeah, I read that several times, and it was mentioned that indeed was a problem at one point. That brings up the bit I read earlier, too, about other battery myths, and I can't remember them right offhand. Certainly, though, charger-specific, I wanted to comment, we've always said this type of battery needs a specific charger, that type of battery needs a specific charger, but some of these battery chargers are advertised as charging many types of batteries. I would assume that that's reasonably safe to assume if they advertise that, or is that asking for a little too much of a miracle to believe?
Oh, it's very reasonable. I have such. And what they have is a switch on the front, or a knob on the front, where you set what kind of battery it is, and then the smart charger knows which algorithm to use.
Okay. I kind of thought that was true, but I wanted to just verify that. All right. This is N7GES, and this is the TechNet. I'm limping along here while Joe is involved with other things. But any other comments or questions, either battery-related or amateur radio-related in general, before we call this good? Seems like we ebb and flow, and things get quiet, and then another question comes up. So, here's your chance.
KE0HIM.
Go ahead, Rick.
Well, with the lead-acid batteries, I know there is a process called equalizing. People do it in their RVs, and some, the expensive ones have a built-in charger that will equalize the batteries. And what it does is it takes the all of the gunk from the process of charging and discharging and puts it back in the acid where it belongs off of the lead plates. Maybe somebody can explain it better than I can. But that makes the batteries last longer.
Are you talking about desulfating?
I'm sorry, Mark. I had my volume turned down too low.
Are you talking about the chargers that will remove sulfate accumulation from the lead plates?
Yes, that's what it is. And they call it equalizing, equalizing them.
And so the question is, does it exist? Do smart chargers do this? Yes, yes.
It was more of a comment than a question, looking on YouTube, you know, RV stuff, and they were equalizing it. I don't fully understand the process. Mine doesn't do it, so I just wanted to bring it up.
Yep, and you get into issues with which generation of lead acid battery are you using. The very most current generation, big manufacturers like Troy, who really specialize in traction batteries, flatly say, don't bother, doesn't matter, don't need it.
Well, that's good to know. Hopefully one of these days I can have some in my little solar for my battery bank, have a bunch of those traction batteries. That'd be optimal.
Are your batteries currently indoors or outdoors, or, you know, garage?
They are in a shed. They are not protected from any, whatever the outside temperature is or the temperature in the shed, that's what temperature the batteries are. But they have full-time, well, when the sun's out, solar charge going into them. And then I dip out of them with my tools and my camper, whatever. But not always. So they're always getting a trickle charge.
Okay, well, I guess the question I'm wondering about is, you know, do you need to spend the extra for traction batteries, or would a deep cycle benefit what you're needing to do here as a way to save some money?
Well, I don't necessarily have to have those. Most of my batteries are car batteries that I have taken out of vehicles that were no longer used. Good batteries, but as everybody says, you can't just suck them down a long ways or you'll ruin them. And I have one deep cycle battery in the mix, I think, one or two. So, you know, it's just a poor boy setup, but it works.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, yeah, I was just thinking, you know, if another deep cycle battery might suit you just fine and take care of things. Now, I'm pleased that it's working, but I'm amazed that you're doing well with all kinds of different batteries. Have you got them isolated in some way from each other so that the charging of one isn't affected by the charging of another?
Many cold cranking amps as a regular car starter battery, but with that 20% overage, you can both have your cake and eat it too.
Mark, I don't know if you made it through because I doubled with you half of that, but would you mind restating it just for my benefit?
Yep, sorry about that. I need to get my second radio turned back on so I can hear myself double. Mike, the good news is that these days you can get deep cycle marine batteries that do have lots of cold cranking amp capacity. This is not true for a traction battery. The deep cycle marine batteries that will put out high cold cranking amps enough to start your engine. The rule of thumb is that you need to buy a deep cycle marine battery with about 20% more capacity than your regular car starter battery. Because although a deep cycle marine battery will put out cold cranking amps, it won't put out as many as a car starter battery. So if you got a, let us say, 100 amp hour car starter battery, you need a deep cycle marine battery with cold cranking amperage of about 120 ampere hours. And then you get to have your cake and eat it too.
I have heard that before. And, like I said, it's just a mix of batteries I had around, and I thought I'd just put them in line there and keep them charged up so they don't go bad. And I've never had that thing go down below 12.4 volts, no matter what I did.
Well, that's cool. My comment was, I know that in the stuff I was reading today, there was some comments about being very careful not to intermix cells of different types in the same charging circuit. And Mark, maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. So I'm wondering if you've got them just in line, or if you've got the charging so that it handles each one separately. And then after you comment, maybe Mark can help me remember if I'm on the right track here.
No, these are all hooked up parallel. They're all lead acid flooded batteries. There is six or seven there. And I pull from the positive of the end of this bank and from the negative of the other bank, the other end of the bank, and I charge them the same way. And I think that's the right way to do that.
Kevin is correct. You do not want to mix different types of batteries because the charging circuitry for a car starter battery is different from the charging circuitry for a deep cycle. So if you're running multiple car starter batteries in parallel, that's fine. Don't mix a deep cycle battery into that stack.
Okay, well, I've got at least one in that mix, so I'll have to pull it out of there, I guess.
I think the main reason for that is that you'll find that you're charging won't be equal, and you'll have, you know, you'll shorten the life of some batteries more than others is the only thing. So I did see that this afternoon, and just occurred to me you might want to know about that is all.
Appreciate it. I do want to know about that, because I had never thought of it that way. I figured they were similar enough that it would be okay. But I'll take it out of there next time I go up.
Well, and then the other thing, I suppose, too, that might be recommendable is every so often check each of those batteries and make sure that they're still actually working okay individually. Because I suspect if you had a bad battery in the line, that your whole performance would go down.
They have one like that once. For some reason, one froze up. I don't know what happened. I think it was depleted too far, and it just died and froze up, and it just about ruined the other battery that was in parallel with it.
Yep, it is important to use a hydrometer to check specific gravity of every cell in every battery.
You can do that on some of them, but unfortunately some are those sealed type where you can't add fluid or check it or anything. So, I don't know. Like I said, it's just a bunch that I had around and put them to use. Definitely appreciate the heads up on some of it, though. Thanks, KE0HIM.
Well, and certainly what you're doing is, as you said, putting things to extra use that are surplus. But yeah, if you wanted something you could absolutely rely on steadily, you probably would have to do a little extra checking and extra monitoring to make sure everything was still performing. But hey, you know, do what you can. Waste not, want not. So anyway, okay. Well, this is the TechNet, and man, we've covered quite a bit of stuff here. Are there any other questions before we think about closing once again? Well, questions may occur to people after this event is over. If you do, please email us. I think we've been having people email Joe, and I think we can continue to do that, and you can also email me. So that would be secretary@ncarc.net. I'm trying to remember if we've been emailing secretary or info. Anybody remember what we've been doing for these net topics? Well, I'll tell you what. For today, if you have additional comments or questions or topic suggestions, email pao@ncarc.net. That one's an easy one to remember. That's me, and I will forward things on to Joe, and the two of us will work on things and try to get the info back to you. We would appreciate questions, comments, and that sort of thing. So please do feel free to email. That's PAO, Papa Alpha Oscar, or Public Affairs Officer at ncarc.net. Well, I want to thank everybody for your participation this evening. We've run an hour and 42 minutes, which I guess has kind of been typical for us lately. And I think we've covered a lot of topics. We do have a recording. We should have a recording of this as well, and it will come up at some point soon when we figure out exactly the logistics of doing that so that you can review it as well. I do not have a topic set for next week, and I don't know if Joe had anything planned. So the two of us are still kind of collaborating and coordinating on this. So we'll have something for you, and we'll get an email out when we determine what that is. So do stay tuned, and your suggestions and comments are always welcome, so please do send them our way. So for this evening, I think we'll say 73 and return the system to normal use, and appreciate all of your involvement and participation in the NCIRC TechNet. So 73s, and have a wonderful week. N7GES.